You're listening to the NYFC podcast. I'm Lindsay Lesher Shute. Most of the nation's produce is picked by people who are not citizens of this country. Overall, the Department of Labor estimates that nearly three quarters of farm workers were born outside of the U.S., and half of all farm workers are undocumented. As you'll hear in today's interview with Iris Figueroa of Farm Worker Justice, these farm workers, documented or not, are facing some tough challenges. Iris talks about the realities of being a farm worker in the U.S., from the threat of ICE raids to the lack of health care, and how a pathway to citizenship could become reality.
Hi, I'm Lydia Nebel, farmer at Second Wind CSA in Gardner, New York. I've been a member of the National Young Farmers Coalition for the last 2 years because I like taking direct action to address exploitation within our food systems. Plus, I love the network of folks I get to learn alongside. For $35 a year, you can join too. In addition to being part of a bright and just future for agriculture in the United States, you'll also get discounts like 10% off high mowing organic seeds and 30% off of red back boots. So it pays for itself. To join, you can go to youngfarmers.org.
Can you just briefly just say your name and your position at Farm Worker Justice?
Sure. So Iris Figueroa, it's spelled like Iris. And I am a staff attorney at Farm Worker Justice. So I cover immigration, labor rights, and also occupational health and safety.
I want to ask a very basic question that I feel like doesn't get talked about nearly enough. How do you distinguish between a farm worker and a farm owner? I ask that because when people say farm workers, they are often meaning something very specific. And some people exclude farm workers from the definition of farmers, which I personally think is wrong. Why distinguish what a farm worker is and what is the meaning of that?
It's interesting that you brought that up because there was a couple of weeks ago, there was some media attention regarding a report that had come out about farmers having a very high rate of suicide.
Yes.
And then they actually had to put out a statement clarifying that they hadn't adequately distinguished between farmers and farm workers. And it was
right.
Actually the farm workers in many cases who had a higher incidence of suicide. So I think it is a little tricky. We don't have a formal definition of what a farm worker is, but we are usually talking about hired workers who are hired by the employers who own the farms. Many of them are hired workers who don't work just for one employer, but might work for multiple employers during a season, even in some cases in different states. And there's certain demographic characteristics that are common to most of the farm workers that we work with. So the National Agricultural Worker Survey, which is some data recollection that the Department of Labor does, shows, you know, through the years as they've done their surveys, that many of the farm workers that are currently in the country are Latino. And according to the most recent data, about three quarters of farm workers were born outside the U.S. So we have a lot of Spanish-speaking Latino workers that are the most common sort of workers that we come across as farm workers. We know that in small farms, that distinction, you know, might not be quite as clear. And there's also an added complication with farm labor contractors, which is something that we're seeing increasingly, where the person actually hiring the worker is not the owner of the establishment where they're working, but some sort of middleman position that has been hired to bring in workers. And so that further complicates things in terms of who the employer is and who the employee is.
You know, in fact, the reason why I brought up this distinction, other than I think it's important for people just to know what we're talking about when we're talking about farm workers, this idea that they're anything other than what we should consider farmers is very wrong because they're such a highly, highly skilled group of individuals who are, in fact, oftentimes doing the majority of the labor. The statistic about farm worker suicide, I wondered if that was a surprise to you or if that's something that you all have observed in the communities that you've been working in?
Yeah, so the timing of the sort of correction was pretty interesting to us, because when the report first came out, we have a whole division of our organization that works on health issues. We have a health team, so they work on mental health issues, other issues affecting farm workers, including diabetes, AIDS, etc. And when that initial report came out, they all, you know, in email correspondence were saying, huh, it's odd that they didn't distinguish farm workers here. I would have thought that the farm worker rate would be very high. It's interesting that it's not highlighted. And so when the clarification came out, we were not surprised at all. And there's various reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
Farm work is very hard work. A lot of farm workers don't have access to healthcare, including mental health services that they might need. They are often very isolated in rural areas. In the case of many of the workers we work with, including, for example, guest workers, they're actually separated from their families for months at a time. There's a lot of factors that could contribute to that sort of situation with farm workers.
It makes a lot of sense. So many farm workers are coming from so far away and are isolated. And I've heard about, you know, farm workers having family very ill, right? Like back in their home country and not able to go back to visit them. So that feeling of separation and inability to get home, I can imagine, I can't really imagine, in fact, how stressful that would be. But farm workers, like the healthcare benefits that they do receive, is there sort of a typical case that you see, like how are farm workers able to access healthcare? Do they have any access, for instance, to like exchange insurance, which is something that are many of our young farmers, they are able to oftentimes access some type of insurance through the exchange if they can afford it. So I'm wondering where are farm workers getting their insurance from?
Yeah, so it varies. An estimated at least half of farm workers, probably more, because we believe it's probably undercounted, are undocumented. And so that does restrict their access. We do know, for example, that many farm workers have U.S. citizen children, and a lot of them are covered by CHIP and Medicaid. There's also migrant health centers in different areas that serve farm workers. And so there are services there. There's also some very practical barriers for a lot of workers for accessing that care. So one is that isolation that I mentioned before. Many of them don't have their own transportation. Going to access medical services means time off of work, which their employer in many cases won't allow, or which will mean a loss of income for them. Many of them don't speak English or feel that they don't speak English well enough. They might not feel culturally comfortable with the person. And so, as I mentioned before, we have a health program, and one of the areas that they work with are people whose role is called promotores de salud, or health promoters, and they're people in the community that are sort of liaisons with the health center to let farm workers know what services are in their communities, how they can access them, and sort of be their guide and be their companions through the process of the follow-up care and what they need to know about their health care. With immigration enforcement and the current context of increased immigration enforcement, we are hearing from a lot of migrant health centers that the visits have declined. And so there's a couple of creative solutions that some centers have come up with. For example, mobile clinics to go to the sites where the workers are actually living and working. There's also been a lot of work done by the national organizations that serve migrant health centers to make sure that they're communicating to workers that it's a safe space for them to be in, and that they're not there to ask them about immigration status. They're there to provide a healthcare service to them. So those are efforts that are currently underway and can be very successful, but there's still a very real fear and very real stress about what leaving the area that they're in could mean.
That's so frustrating. Healthcare is just the most basic need for anyone, but particularly agricultural workers that are using their bodies every day, you know, in the course of their work. You know, it is so essential that these workers are able to get healthcare. Is the community of farm owners that is employing these workers, do they ever help?
It's very hard to generalize. Unfortunately, we do see many more employers than we would like to see, who, especially if it's an injury relating to the job, are not only not supportive of workers, but threaten to retaliate workers, who send workers back. We've seen that with guest workers, for example. If they get injured on the job, they're just sent back to their home country. We have employers who are not providing workers with the tools that they need to prevent injuries in the first place. So two big areas where we see that are pesticide safety protections, not giving workers adequate training, not giving workers adequate equipment, not giving workers medical treatment as promptly as they should or at all, and helping them to access that, and as well as heat stress. So we actually had two recent deaths because of heat stress in the past month of workers, very young workers. And, you know, these are completely preventable deaths. And so it's a very troubling pattern because, like you said, one would hope that they would see that it's in their best interest to have a healthy environment for their workers.
Absolutely. Can you just sort of break down what are the types of workers and their legal status who are working on farms in the U.S.?
Yes, there's U.S. citizens. According to the data that we have, it's probably about a quarter of workers, give or take. The rest are legal permanent residents or green card holders. And then about half, as I mentioned, are undocumented, meaning they're not authorized to work. So there's different types of status that workers might have to be authorized to work. So for example, two categories I wanna make sure I mention are DACA and TPS, because they've been in the news a lot because they are in danger of not existing. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals DACA program was a program that gave protections to young immigrants who had come to the country as children, and it authorizes them to work under that status. There is ongoing litigation right now, various proposals in Congress, because that program was rescinded in September of last year. We do know that some workers, farm workers as well as family members, might have this status. Another status that I mentioned is temporary protected status, or TPS. This is assigned based on the country of origin of the worker because of the country situation in the origin country. So it could be political upheaval, or it could be, for example, a natural disaster like an earthquake. There was TPS designation for various countries, including Haiti. And we do know that there are many farm workers, especially in the East Coast of the U.S., who had been working and are still working under temporary protected status, who are from Haiti. And so they also are facing a lot of uncertainty, not knowing if there's going to be a solution, a legislative solution, to keep them from being unprotected and going from being authorized to being unauthorized in the country. And then a subsection of farm workers, but a section that's growing very rapidly, is guest workers. So there are a series of guest worker visas in the country related to different industries. So the one that we focus on is H-2A visas. They're agricultural temporary worker visas. And the way that they're structured is that the employer here in the U.S., in theory, is not able to find U.S. workers, and so they request foreign workers to come in to fill those positions on a seasonal basis. but the worker is tied to the employer. So it's not just their job that is tied to the employer, it's their immigration status. And so what that creates is a situation of great vulnerability, because the worker knows that if he or she speaks up, the retaliation is not just possibly losing the job, it's also being returned to their home country and also possibly being blacklisted from being recruited in the future. And unfortunately, there's current proposals in Congress to weaken some of the very limited protections that are currently in the program. And that's something we've been working on a lot this past year.
That's right. So the and that's the Goodlatte bill that was just introduced again last night. Is that right?
Right. So the latest version of the Goodlatte bill was introduced last week. It's called the Ag and Legal Workforce Act. And so it has this guest worker bill as well as an E-Verify component. And the E-Verify is a mandatory employment verification system, electronic verification system for employers. But it's a very error-prone system. And so it's concerning to growers across the board. In terms of the guest worker piece of it, it's just a new version of a bill that has been in Congress for the past year. The first time it was introduced was last fall. Then it was included as part of a broader immigration bill that was voted on in the House of Representatives, which did not pass. It was then included in an amendment to a second immigration bill that was brought on the floor of the House that also did not pass. And now it's been introduced as a standalone bill. There were some indications by some members that they had, that they were hoping to move forward with a vote on this standalone bill this month before the August recess. But it's looking almost certain that that is not going to happen, in part because of criticism of some of the provisions of the guest worker program by some very powerful grower groups who are especially concerned about the fact that the guest worker program would not provide an opportunity for current undocumented agricultural workers to have a path to status or to stay in the country. Instead, it would require them to touch back, as they euphemistically call it, to their home country, and then hope that an employer will sponsor them as a guest worker. And we know that that's not a realistic proposition. Many of these undocumented workers have been here not just for years, but for decades. According to that survey that I mentioned, the average number of years is 15 years. For workers. They have families here, they have citizens, children here, and so they're a part of their communities, and they've been a part of their
communities. For a long time, yeah. My member of Congress, John Faso, signed on to this, which I thought was very interesting. He represents many dairy farmers here locally that really can't use the current H-2A program because it's not year-round and they need year-round labor. So this does solve that, but current workers who are already on the payroll and important to those dairies, they would be required to go back home first before being able to work legally at those operations. Some of the communications that they've sent to from his office, from John Faso's office about this, have suggested that it would only be prospective workers, but this would also be for current farm workers.
Correct. And at the same time, E-Verify would kick in. Mm-hmm. So these workers would probably be driven further into the shadows. And I do want to make a note, because you mentioned dairy, and dairy has been lobbying very hard on this. The current H-2A program is seasonal. And the reason why it's seasonal is because it's premised on the idea that these are jobs that have a temporary need. And so because of that, you need to bring in foreign workers. For a year-round job like dairy, employers are supposed to provide wages and working conditions to make that a full-time job for the domestic workers that are there. So that's not the purpose of the program. And that's part of the problem that we're seeing, and part of the concern from a labor rights perspective is the wage depression and the negative impact on working conditions for all workers when we're seeing H-2A guest workers being brought in. We have heard stories of domestic workers who have been doing this work, both undocumented workers and workers with work authorization, who are not being hired for those jobs anymore and who are being displaced. We know, for example, in dairy that there are a pretty high number of undocumented workers. It's hard to get exact numbers, but we know anecdotally that there's a lot of undocumented workers, and we also know that there's a lot of very problematic working conditions, high injury rates, etc. And so it's concerning to us to want to expand this program while at the same time stripping away the labor protections that are there to make sure that workers, both the guest workers coming in and the U.S. workers, are not exploited, because it doesn't just limit the worker protections for incoming guest workers, it would also take away protections to ensure recruitment of domestic workers.
Oh, I see. So in addition to everything else that's not good about the bill, it would also lower the wage requirements.
There's something called the adverse effect wage rate, which is calculated by area, and that's a requirement in the current program. And so it would eliminate that. And also eliminate the prevailing wage requirement. And so it would probably be closer to federal minimum wage in many cases, which, depending on the area you're in, could be a few dollars an hour, which is a lot when you're a farm worker. And then on top of that, it would charge workers for things that now are required under the program. For example, housing, transportation reimbursement, and those costs are costs that would be very difficult to bear by farm workers.
And farm workers would be responsible for that under the new bill?
Correct.
Oh, boy.
Correct. And those protections, by the way, they don't come out of thin air. There was a program in the 20th century called the Brazero Program, which you may be familiar with, which brought in millions of Mexican farm workers, and the housing conditions were deplorable. Where there was housing, because a lot of farm workers ended up just being homeless, we know that there's a rural housing shortage in a lot of areas. So workers coming in, seasonal basis, not speaking the language, not having credit, etc. Realistically, we know that's going to happen again.
It's impossible. I mean, I'll just say, like, mm-hmm. We built farm worker housing at our farm last year specifically because of this. You know, certainly workers who don't have language skills and relationships and a U.S. bank account, perhaps, and credit, all of the above references, to think that they would be able to secure their own housing in the U.S. Or would certainly, I would think, lead to some potentially very, very poor housing. I hear complaints just from local farmers here. We are in the Hudson Valley of New York State, so we have seen more farms use the H-2A program just this season. But the farmers who have been using it for many, many years, decades, in fact, and have these very long-term relationships with many of the workers, you know, I do hear about, like, the inspectors coming out to inspect farm worker housing and, you know, finding a screen out of a window and the farmer getting dinged, that kind of stuff. So, and so sometimes the complaints seem like a little bit unreasonable, but the principle seems good. Like, why do you think that the housing and transportation provisions now in H-2A were stripped? Do you think it's because of farmers having the situation like I've heard about, where they're getting dinged for these little things that are kind of outside of their control? Or do you think it's just like an economic issue where larger associations of farm owners or otherwise, just from an economic standpoint, think that it is too much to be asked to provide all of this for their workers?
So I think, you know, these protections are Reagan-era protections. They're not so out there. I think a lot of the pushback are from the larger associations. I do want to say one thing. You know, I often hear from growers that it's too much government intervention, these inspections, etc. But let's just take a step back. This whole program exists because farmers are saying they don't have workers. So the government is being used to bring in workers for these employers who are saying otherwise they wouldn't have workers. So the government has already intervened at the request of employers. And as a balance to that, and as just an acknowledgement that human beings are being brought in, there are certain requirements and there's certain monitoring. You know, it can vary a lot by state, but we do know that we hear from farm worker advocates that there's a lot of cases where there's not enough inspections. For example, they will inspect the housing before workers come, and then there'll be many more workers than there were supposed to be in that housing, and there's no follow-up inspection. So I think, you know, you hear from both sides in terms of what the inspection and the enforcement is. Back to sort of the beginning of your question about the increase in the program, which is definitely something we're seeing, and we do have numbers on that because the Department of Labor keeps track, and it's increased exponentially over the last decade. I think that for us, the first solution should be the workers that are already here, who have already been here doing this work. And the fact that instead of putting forth that solution, what they're trying to do is expand and weaken the guest worker program, we think is just the wrong focus and the wrong priority.
What, in your mind, would be the most ideal solution for current workers who are here, who are three quarters of the workforce? What do you think Congress should do? What would be an ideal solution for those workers?
So I actually have not just an ideal solution, but a proposed practical solution that has been brought forward in both the House and the Senate. It's called the Ag Worker Program Act, and it is a program under which current unauthorized workers can apply for something called a blue card, which is a stepping stone towards a green card, and their family members can apply as well. And I really want to highlight that family piece. You know, we've seen in the headlines recently the issue of family separation, but deportations also cause family separation. And we have a lot of families in this country who are mixed status families. And so not just being able to provide a path for the workers themselves, but also acknowledging that a lot of them have families in this country as well. And so that program would allow them to continue to work in agriculture and eventually be able to get a green card. And this program is not new. This was actually part of an immigration compromise that passed in the Senate in 2013. It seems so long ago, and so it might seem so far-fetched now, but an immigration compromise actually did pass in the Senate.
I hear mainly, even from these dairy farmers, the desire to see their current workers have legal status or some pathway to citizenship. Do you think most farmers, in your experience, or farm owner representative organizations, American Farm Bureau Federation, National Farmers Union, have they been supportive of proposals like that? And have they advocated for that solution specifically? Or do you see them more on the side of looking to the solution being reforming these existing guest worker programs?
So in the past compromises that there've been, they have been supportive as part of the broader compromise. We would love to hear growers be more vocal about that piece, you know, and just the importance of the current workers that are here. And I think a lot of the farmers and farm owners that we talk to do feel that that's important, but they're not always making their voices heard. And we think it's really important, just taking a look sort of the broader immigration narrative and the moment that we're in right now. we think it's really important, especially locally, for people to speak up and tell their narrative about immigrant workers in their communities and in their areas, because people make a lot of assumptions, I think, about where employers might stand or about who might be working or might not be working in their community. And so I think as farmers, as farm owners, you have a significant voice, and your voice can have weight because you are seeing that reality.
That's a great, great point. I have seen and heard about in this community some real fear among undocumented workers and those that employ undocumented workers about ICE and ICE raids. There was the dairy in upstate New York where one worker was arrested. And can you speak specifically to how broadly you've seen ICE approach farms across the country? And do you think that that is a threat and a consideration that farm workers and farm owners should be aware of?
I think that that's something that farm workers should be aware of, regardless of whether it's happened in their area or not. I think it's important to be informed, and I think it's important to be prepared. We saw a raid last year in a mushroom nursery. And we also know, for example, out in California, that even though there weren't raids in the farms themselves, ICE was targeting farm workers on sort of their usually traveled routes to work, which is also very problematic. And I think it's very important for farm owners, employers, to be aware of their rights and to exercise those rights, because in many cases that can be an added layer of protection. For example, if they own the property and they assert, wanting to see a warrant or whatever the case may be, depending on the situation. And so I think it's really important for people to be mindful of that. And we know that there is very real fear out there with this immigration enforcement. And we are working with farm worker organizations to make sure that on the local level they are informing people of what their rights are.
What do you think the best resource is for farmers who might want to know how to respond in the event of an ICE raid or any action that might be taken against one of their farm workers? Does farmworkerjustice.org, do you have resources like that that we should point to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so on our website, we have sort of an outline of Know Your Rights, which has links to different guides that are available online from different organizations. And we also have some FAQs on what to do during a raid. And there's various organizations, including, for example, the ACLU, National Immigration Law Center, NILC, and others who have online resources. And many of those resources are available in multiple languages.
It is. I see the connection between the work Young Farmers Coalition does and what Farm Worker Justice does as we talk about giving undocumented farm workers who are currently here in the United States a path to a blue card or green card or citizenship. I also hope that we can talk about how those farm workers can have a path to becoming a farm owner. And we've seen a really successful program at Green Market in New York City, where they specifically worked on this, you know, these highly skilled individuals who sometimes had been farm workers or had been farm owners in their home country, who have now started operations. Certainly for young farm workers or young people who might be even under the DACA program, they are unable to access many of the USDA programs because of their citizenship status. So that might be a loan program, for instance, which is the microloan program is just so important for the young farmers in our network in terms of getting going in that first bit of capital. We have this national situation where there is this critical lack of young people wanting to farm. So I would think that this community of farm workers in part could be part of the solution in finding that sort of next generation of farm owners. So I guess I wonder, do you think that's possible? Do you think there is interest within the farm worker community in being that next generation? And what do you think are the steps towards facilitating some of those farm workers, in fact, becoming farm owners?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the immigration piece is so crucial, and it really does just affect everything else in terms of access to services that are really direly needed and really important. I know that racial equity is one of your sort of founding principles, and USDA has a not so great history when it comes to loans to farmers of color. And so I think that to the extent that we can keep that sort of critical lens on whether it's farmers or farm workers and possible discrimination because of their national origin or their race, I think that would be to the benefit of all young farmers and help to create the situation where their work is valued and where we can have immigration status that reflects the fact that they've been in their communities and they're an integral part of their communities.
We talked about ICE and how we've seen some raids in agricultural operations and communities, even outside of those operations, targeting agricultural workers. The family separations we are seeing at the border, how do you think that is impacting farm workers?
Yeah, so the family separation crisis on the border is, as one of my colleagues said, it's really potential future farm workers, right, who may be coming across. We know that there's farm worker communities that are settled, but we also know that there are some farm workers coming across the border. And I think it's just symbolic of sort of the broader dehumanization of immigrants and lack of empathy for the circumstances that might have led people to make that decision. And I think the trauma, not just on those particular families, but on the broader immigrant community, is really going to be felt for years to come. We know people might have family members here in the U.S. who are farm workers, who obviously are feeling the effects of that as well. And so even if it might not be directly affecting farm worker communities, it's still having an impact. And I think it just drives people further and further into the shadows. I'm sorry, my interview isn't more uplifting today.
No.
I feel like I'm always the bearer of bad news.
Well, you know, I just want to say how much we appreciate you doing this work and farm worker justice. It is so important. I think it is certainly the responsibility of the entire farmer community, farm owners, and in particular to try to help. Is there anything else that Edis, that you wanted to say or make sure that you covered today? We've gotten through a lot, and I'm sure there's 10 more hours of interview that we could do, if not much more. There's so much.
On that note, I want to make sure I give you my the Farm Worker Justice website address so that people can access it and find out more information on all of these issues and some of the other issues that we work with. So it's www.farmworkerjusticealtogether.org. And you can find resources there on immigration, health, pesticides, heat stress, you know, all the issues we discussed. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity. I think it's great to have a young farmer organization that's interested in our work and that can be a different voice from the one maybe that farm worker advocates are used to hearing. Certainly, we'll have, I think, a lot of opportunity for collaboration in the future.
Thank you so much, Edis.
Thank you.
For more information about farm worker justice, go to farmworkerjustice.org. We will continue to follow farm worker issues in this podcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes. And if you know someone who might like the show, tell them to check it out. Thank you to Iris for speaking to me, Andrew Barenberg for recording, and Hannah Beal for editing. And thank you for listening. See you next week.